Oh boy, welcome to the Hooniverse podcast as a helicopter goes overhead. Good timing, thank you. Whoever that, hopefully it's not like firefighters or something. I feel like a real dickhole.
Buzzing the tower?
A little bit. Sometimes the tower around here gets buzzed quite a bit.
That's cool.
Welcome to episode 322. I'm your host, Jeff Glucker. Joining me is my man, Ron Baugh. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm well. Yourself?
Good. So we didn't record last week because we put out a redo episode that I got to work after it broke. My computer crashed in the middle of it, but we got the episode out.
Thank you, good Lord, baby Jesus.
Sweet, really, 17-pound.
That one was fun.
Yeah.
There's some absurdities, but
it was a good we were drinking a little bit at that one, too.
Yeah,
and totally. I don't remember what we said towards the end of it until I got like five messages from people laughing about something. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I had to go see one who said it. Of course it was me, because I'm an idiot. And and two, make sure it wasn't like super inappropriate. Cause like
right.
I usually know if something bad happens in the podcast, I'm like, oh, we gotta cut that.
It was like an immediate reaction and realization.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened with us, but I imagine like I've been in other situations where it's easy to recognize like,
well, it hasn't,
this is problematic.
It hasn't happened in that way, but there was a thing I forgot to cut where we literally took a 2-minute bathroom break,
right.
which is just bad form. but whatever. I'm sure worse has happened on this podcast. So we got it pieced back together. It worked. People thought it was funny, which is good. And it immediately led into a conversation on allyship, which I've been told was a really good conversation. So that feels good as well. So we had a very crude but funny joke and then well-handled serious talk.
Totally.
Which,
I don't remember it exactly either. Like when you reminded me via text, I was like, oh my God, we did that. I was just like, oh, right. But, I feel like we're both good, decent people with good hearts and the best intentions. So I don't feel like, we might offend somebody, but I don't feel like anything can totally be taken out of context and just made to like look us like, make us look like assholes. Like,
yes. It actually happened.
You or I are, and it's just jokes.
Right. Well, it did happen once on the older version of the podcast where I said something that at the time I didn't think was inappropriate. And then somebody messaged me who says they're a big fan of the show and they were very disappointed by the way I handled something. And they were totally right. And then the next one, I apologized because they were right. The way I did something was inappropriate. And it was around like – it centered around autistic kids, which I made a joke I shouldn't have made and it was in poor form and they called me out on it, rightly so, and we apologized and it has happened in the history of the show.
You're a good dude. Like you recognize when you're wrong and when you fuck up. Like
I felt terrible.
That's really all you can ask anybody.
Yeah. All right. So on to, even though last week we started with, we didn't need to talk about car stuff, which actually I thought was great. We talked about trying to find like, even
the first. Because I haven't done anything.
No, I haven't tried to talk to you. no, I have not. I haven't even tried. So put it out there again. If everybody knows how to find a doctor. I thought
maybe we'd get like all sorts of recommendations flowing in like from our audience. But our audience is just as clueless.
They probably all need doctors too.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't afford healthcare. You can't afford gas now. Jeez, so we're all screwed. Christ, but we're going to kick things off with cars again this time. Because the last week and a half prior to this week, I was wrenching on stuff, which is hilarious to me. I was tapped for a side gig for an outfit called carparts.com, which sells, believe it or not, car parts. Very nice people. They hired me to do a video series, just simple tutorials of wrenching on cars. And I went into it a little bit nervous because I am not the greatest wrench. I'm a novice, 100 times over. I've learned a few things from other better, smarter people, and I can do some very minor basic stuff without supervision. And even then I might text a friend like, hey, why isn't this doing this? And they're like, just do this. Okay. So I told the people at CarWorks, like, yo, I can do some basic stuff. They're like, no, don't worry about it. We will have a mechanic on site off camera if you have questions and need assistance. I was like, oh, that sounds fucking great. And this dude was super cool and very helpful. And he has some like really cool cars, and we were talking about some fun stuff, and I did most of the wrenching because I did my research. And then when I got stuck, we would cut and be like, hey, Otis, why is this giving me trouble? You're like, try this.
I don't think I could trust a mechanic's name more than Otis.
Yeah.
Otis tells me what to do. I'm listening.
Yeah. Well, I'm adhering. He was a very interesting, unique person. His real name is Paul, but he prefers to go by Otis. So I'm like, fuck it. This dude wants to be called Otis. I'm going to call him Otis. But he has a stock 94 or 96 Supra, like bone stock. Uh-huh. He also has an Evo. He also has an S13 drift car. He also has a Land Cruiser. He has the Lexus. He has the LX. He also had like an original, whatever was before the Tacoma, like the SR, the pickup. He has a bunch of like random rad shit.
Did he just show up in a different sick car every day?
Kind of, yeah. He alternated between the Supra, the LX, and then that little pickup. It was super. It was pretty sweet. I think he had other things too that he didn't even get to. But the wrenching, it was basic because they based the videos they wanted to create off of their search terms on their website, which is really smart. And two of the most popular things are an 07 Camry and a 2016 F250. So it couldn't be more different, which was great. And it was fascinating to wrench on modern stuff. I've never wrenched on anything that close to that modern. The most modern thing I've put wrenches to is my Montero, which is from 1991, not counting oil changes on and the brakes on my wife's Mazda, which I've only done the brakes recently. So diving in, I was fascinated by some things are super easy and then some things are way more complicated. So like on the Camry, we had to remove the lower control arm. We're removing and replacing a lower control arm on a 2007 Camry. I mean, there's only a lower control arm. There isn't an upper.
It's like a performance upgrade or just like stock?
Nope, stock swap. So car parts is all like stock parts, pretty much. So it's like if for some reason you needed to replace your control arm, which if you did, you'd probably have to replace like a few other things too.
But a whole bunch of other shit.
Right? Like you find your hub because it's, a mile back down the road. But so to get the control arm out, you have to loosen the engine mount, jack the engine up, and remove one of the engine mounts to get the fucking control arm out. And I'm like, this is bananas glad. I was so glad the mechanic was there because I wouldn't have thought to be like, he's like, all right, we got a support jack. Let's crank the engine up. That'll loosen it up and we'll be able to get enough angle to get the engine mount out. I'm like, dude, if you weren't here, there's no way I could have done this one. Also, this is insane.
It sounds like you have the right tools, and I feel like that's like 80% of, being a mechanic and feeling capable and like...
I think some of it is confidence too.
I think totally, some of it, but I mean, having the right tool like definitely gives you that confidence. Like, it's like, okay, this is made for this. Like, you have a support jack, you have a trans jack, you have,
Yeah, but I only knew to use it. Like, I only knew to use it because the dude was there, I could have the nicest tools with all the stuff next to me. And if I don't have the confidence to be like, you know what, let's jack the engine up. Like, I'd be like, cause I wouldn't have thought to do that. I'd be like, jack the engine up. What? We're going to fuck this car up. And we jacked it up. Engine mount came out. You would get to the bolts on the backside of the control arm, blah, blah, blah. They were big Mondo, like 22 mil bolts or something like that. Get those out. Thing came out, thing went back in, engine mount back in. And we had a lift, which was also like cheater shit. Like that changes the game.
It's not, typical for your shade tree mechanic to have a lift.
No.
Like anybody that's serious about like actually wrenching on their shit, like hopefully has access at least to a lift. Like, that's why I say like the tools give you the confidence.
But
never had access to like a fully equipped garage like that, then anything would be intimidating.
Yeah. Well, we actually, this job would have been easier if we just jacked the wheel up, because once the car was on the lift, to then use the jack to then jack the engine up, we're jacking up so high that the mechanic was like, be careful, because if we start pushing this engine too high, the car is going to start to lift off the lift. And for 1 second, you saw it get light on one of the pads. I was like, that's terrifying. He's like, yeah, we're going to bring that down. And he was a safety first guy. But in that moment, excuse me, one more. Oh, sorry about that. And see, I got to cut that. cut the sneezes. In that moment, he's like, just bring this down a little bit. We can do this. Boom, 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 boom. We'll get the angle. I was like, all right, cool. All right, cool. And then the flip side, working on the F-250, was pretty interesting, that the torque specs for bolts on a heavy duty truck are bananas in some spots. what did we replace? Was it the it might've been like a brake caliper bracket, or it was like something to do with the brakes. And one of the two bolts needed to be 203 foot pounds. And
like it, hanging on the torque wrench.
Well, that was the thing where the torque wrench was, because it was like in the fender. I couldn't get my full body weight on it. So like, I'm like, I couldn't get it to click. And I'm like, this is fucking crazy. This is fucking. And then like, finally we got an angle where it's like, ah, gah, gah. And we couldn't put that one on the lift because the lift wasn't rated for an F-250 Super Duty. So that one was just jacked up a little bit. But I couldn't get my body weight on that. But the, like that torque spec, I was like 203 pound feet. Like, oh my God, these eight lug wheels and like all this crazy shit. It was cool. It was also eye opening working with a real mechanic. He's like, cause I'd be like, all right, let me get the hand tool. He's like, do you want an impact for that? Or, you know, a gun? And I'm like, no, I got the hand tool. And then like halfway through, I'm like, give me the fast. I'm like, why? Cause here at home, it's, you know, sockets and wrenches and this and that,
exactly.
So, you know, yeah. So I'm Googling now, like, you know, the Milwaukee impact and the ratchet and the, all like your power tools are. Yeah.
Totally.
It's the way to go.
24 volt set. Like you get everything from like a weed whacker to an impact gun to like a power sander. Like,
all that
stuff is like interchangeable.
Yeah. No, I'm already in the Milwaukee ecosystem with the battery. So, you know, I've already got a couple things. Including like the little portable shop vac, but then now I'm going to get the 3/8 ratchet, the power ratchet, just like, no more click, click.
Yeah. I just got the little blower for car washing and detailing, just like cleaning out like little areas.
Oh,
it's just, you know, 24 volt fucking, you know, blower. It's the best thing ever.
Which brand is it?
Water out of the cracks and crevices. I don't even remember. It's yellow. So it's either Stanley or Ryobi.
I got to see if Milwaukee makes one then too. I'm sure they do. They all make the same stuff.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
But I got to stay there because that's the batteries I have. So, So the videos were super fun. The team was awesome. You know, two cameras, producers. It was like a real shoot in a studio, I haven't done that in a while. So that was fun. Gained more confidence. The crazy thing too, my knuckles have been like dirty and damaged ever since. And it's been a struggle to get them clean and then moisturized is crazy. So I looked it up, and like hardcore mechanics use, let's see, I can't see my camera right now. They use this stuff, O'Keefe's Working Hands. You only need a little bit. This stuff stuff's the bomb. And then you need the orange soap to get the rest off, and then just a brush. I mean, like, get in there. Like, I would come back and it looked like I was in a prize fight on my knuckles. It was crazy.
Damn, jeez. How many days of shooting?
I was putting in work. 8 or something like that. Right. Yeah, I think it was 8 days. And it was good. I think it went well. It was, like I said, it was inspiring. Speaking of Super Duty trucks, as a good segue, because you, on the other hand, were not wrenching, but you were around some big trucks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Man, it's been a minute. That was 2 weeks ago. I mean, you know, we've broken down the fourth wall here. We're totally transparent on when we last recorded. But 2 weeks ago, our boy Ryan Anderson, the driver of the Son of a Digger monster truck and Monster Jam series, who's now a Hoonigan-sponsored athlete. They announced that just before the couple Anaheim rounds of Monster Jam. So before the second weekend of Monster Jam at Angel Stadium, he brought his monster truck by Hoonigan and basically shredded the yard, like crushed a couple cars, like popped some jumps, like some, like, you know, I don't even know the names of all these tricks. It's just like skateboarding what he does with this truck now. Like, it's insane. Like, you know, he'll get the truck completely vertical and like keep it there for 30, 60 seconds at a time, just bouncing back and forth. He'll like literally cross the yard, like, you know, on two wheels, just like nose down. And it's, I mean, it's insane considering the scale of this thing. Like, it's just so massively destructive. Like, if it rolls over a car, it's like, you know, that thing is decimated immediately. Like, we've been around him a few times for different like stunt driving stuff. And the handlers, like, they're always just like, and producers are like, stay away. Nobody be anywhere like within like 100 feet of this thing, because he cannot see you. If you're at ground level, it doesn't matter how far away you are from him. Like, unless you're like, you know, 50 to 100 yards out, like, he cannot see you. He has no idea that you're there. You're just like an ant in the yard. So it's incredibly dangerous. And like, you realize like how controlled and how incredibly capable he is behind the wheel. Because it's like the rear wheel steering is like a switch, and like, you know, it's like they have one like central brake between the trans and the drive shaft, I think. So it's like, you know, they the technology is super specific. They have a Power Glide transmission, so they have a 2-speed Power Glide transmission that you could have bought in like 1957, you know, but obviously beefed up. But it's just like, it's this weird, like, the machine itself is this weird combination of super high tech and like an evolution of like monster truck, like, performance and technology over the last 30, 35 years.
Right.
And like, just this antiquated stuff that just works because it's heavy duty. And like, you know, like, people have engineered these things 10 times beyond what they were originally, like the Power Glide. And like, now you've got like a pretty much bulletproof transmission that can handle 1500 horsepower. And, you know, it's just the wildest thing to watch because the noise is so incredible.
Right.
And like, we watch from the roof, so it was cool. It was just like, you know, it was one of those days where it's just like, I'm not gonna top this day at work, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just, you know, I didn't have to be there. I was definitely not essential to the production, but everybody's like, monster truck on the street and in our backyard, like, you should come. Like, yeah, I'm coming.
Yeah. That's insane. And like, that's not a huge space. It's like it's a good size space for what it is for normal cars. But even then, people,
it's terrifying to drift in
like a
specific built drift car in that space. Like, that's terrifying.
Right. That's and then you got to go to Monster Jam.
Yeah, Monster Jam was, so that was Wednesday. Just a few days later, we went to Monster Jam. Our man Ryan Anderson took W. He did a backflip. Nice. He landed one of the few successful backflips of the night and immediately like kicked a rear wheel off, and that was the end of the show. He was the last performer, and he won overall. I think he won freestyle and two wheel challenge, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, he took the overall win for the night, so that was cool.
Do they still like race?
Sweet and stuff. Yeah, they do racing. Like, it's like a 3-part deal now. It's like, first is racing, so it's like, you know, like a top 16. You know, countdown or showdown. And then they have a 2-wheel challenge, which is pretty much freestyle, but like, how long can you maintain like 2 wheels and what kind of stunts can you do on 2 wheels?
Oh, wow.
And then they have the freestyle challenge where it's just like, just get buck and do whatever the hell you want. And like, you know, the more you destroy your truck and your equipment, the more points you're going to get in the
air. Honestly, yeah.
It takes a total meltdown nowadays to take the W.
Damn.
Have to go flying. Yeah.
I've never been to one.
Oh my God, dude. I know we tried to get you out there and you know that whole debacle, but I didn't know you'd never been. I mean, honestly, it's like the most insane thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, I would have bought you tickets. And just,
No. They were, I mean, even the cheapest tickets, they were pretty expensive. Even the cheapest tickets.
Really? I have no idea how much they were.
Like, the cheapest I found were like 80, which mean, in the grand scheme isn't crazy, but it's, I mean, it's kind of a lot, but whatever. We'll get it next time it comes around.
Yeah, totally. I think we might be going to Dodger Stadium next. We should go then.
Oh, really?
A hike for you, but it's actually probably a better
show. No. We can figure it out. That'd be cool. Because I told my daughter about it, and she wants to go too. So it could be good. Now, we mentioned lifts and garages earlier. You have ascended as a car person. You have ascended. You and some folks went in on garage space, and you are about to live the dream of shared. You don't have to bring it home.
You hear me knocking on wood?
Oh yeah.
I'm pretty thrilled, man. Like the thing that I've been looking forward to the most in like the last couple of years is to have like a dedicated garage space where my cars are safe. You know, I've told the tales of my cars getting broken into and all the other mayhem here in downtown Long Beach, and it's just, you know, it's gotten to the point where I'm not comfortable keeping anything anywhere down here. So luckily, me and a few coworkers, we still haven't like publicly debuted this, but you know, I'm not giving anything away by just saying that like we have a shared garage space. I won't even say what city it's in, but with some new lifts and some creative parking, I think we can fit about 16 cars.
Damn.
And I think it's like between 2,500 and 3,000 square feet, but it's like nicely painted white. It's clean. It's just, I mean, we've just got storage for wheels, tires, you know, other parts and stuff. And I want to get a toolbox. You know, it's a luxury that I haven't afforded myself because I really had nowhere to keep tools. But like, I'm dying to have all my stuff like consolidated and like locked up and safe. Yep. You know, I've never really had that. I'm, you know, I built my Mustang out of a carport in the valley and every single night I had to pack all my tools and parts up and take everything inside the house and do it all over again the next day. And I think that contributed to the delay in that project. I mean, I did as much as I could, as often as I could, but you know, I was motivated, but still it just sucks.
Yeah.
You know, having to pack everything up and, you know, like I was saying earlier, like having the right tools and having the right equipment, like having lifts, like, you know, one service lift. So we can do brakes, wheels, tires, that kind of stuff, suspension stuff really easily. Like is, you know, it's just a godsend. Like I'm thrilled to have this space. And like just today, like on my way home from work, I stopped by and washed my truck and like, It felt like such a luxury, and it was just like, I can't believe, like, I wanted to pinch myself. Like,
there's a space to wash stuff too.
Yeah, wash my stuff, like, you know, charge all my power tools, and like, you know, got my wheels, optional wheels and tires over here on the rack. Like, it's pretty brilliant, and it's like a bat cave for us. We actually call it the shitbox speakeasy. So, maybe that will become the hashtag for the space, but it's cool, man. Just to have a shared space with guys that I work with that I trust and vice versa. And, you know, they have cool cars too. So I have the junkiest shit by far with my K10 and my Lincoln.
That's the most interesting. Is the Lincoln going in there?
Yeah. Lincoln will go in there. Hopefully in the next week or two.
Sweet. Sweet. I've never seen that one in person. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things that I'm excited for that space for is hopefully I can pull the motor for a rebuild or a motor swap. Like I'm working on a couple of different options there, but like just having a place that's, you know, accessible and easy for me to work on
will
advance so many projects that I've delayed for the last year or two.
And one of the people involved in this, who I won't say the names or anything like that, is they're leveling up their car game trade-in deal. I'm not going to say names. I'm not going to say cars, which is unfortunate for those of you listening, but I'm just going to say
maybe by next week, we'll be able to talk about it.
Okay.
Like, but name names. I don't want to say anything out of pocket with having this.
Is a person who's had cars and trades cars and upgrades, and they keep just topping themselves, and it's wild. And I don't know how they do it, but good for them. I sent him a note on Instagram too. It'd be like, this latest one is out of this world. So
super proud of him and glad to share that space with him. And I feel like everything's kind of coming together at once and we're all just like super excited to like have this space.
If you follow Ron and I and you know who we know and who we converse with online, you might have an idea who we're talking about, but if not, we'll talk about it later. Let's talk about more of our own stuff. Like, so now that you have the space, do you have any updates on what's going on with your vehicles?
Everything's going in there. Like, you know, I'm ordering parts like crazy for the Mustang, for the K10 to get that, you know, turned around. I've got to get like an all new column and wiring, key switch, all that stuff. So I'm ordering all those parts. I'm ordering all the stuff that I need for the Mustang, including a Holley Terminator X, like fuel management system and The Lincoln, like I'm in a position where I may trade my buddy back home in Atlanta. He built the motor that's in my Mustang currently. And the Mustang is like the motor is A1. It's the wiring. It's the issue. Like the motor is just bored 30 over 350 Windsor with head cam intake. And
isn't the wiring partly related to like the suspension and wheel fitment too?
Yeah, exactly. Like the previous owner did a wire tuck and moved all the wires from in the engine compartment into the wheel wells. And with the wider wheels and tires that I've added, it's rubbed through and created so many shorts and issues. And, you know, it's, you know, stuff's not grounding right, so it's just like rip all that stuff out, replace it with the Holley Terminator X, and you know I should be good to go with that car.
All right,
but that's too easy. I feel like I have to complicate things. So my same friend that built the motor, he just built a 5.0 based motor, a 331 with heads cam intake, and like it's a higher revving engine. It's just as stout as my 351, but it. I'm thinking about buying that and putting that in the Mustang and putting the 351, which is a little bit lazier. It's not as like rowdy as the 331. I'm thinking about putting the 351 in my Lincoln. So I'll weigh the options there and see if it's, you know, makes more sense to rebuild the 430 or whatever that's in the Lincoln.
Yeah.
Or to swap to a 351 and, you know, do like a C6 trans or something like that. I think the Lincoln has like a C4 or C6. So I don't know. Yeah. It's just stuff I've got to weigh out, and you know, I don't want to rush it. I just want to get everything in front of me and like really assess the car and see what I want to do with it.
Well, now you have the space.
Yeah. And
which is awesome.
Space is what I've needed all this time to kind of give this build direction and figure out what we want to do with it. So,
yeah, I'm super pumped for that space. That's so rad.
Yeah, dude, you got to come check it out. I'll let you know.
Any updates on the Audi?
Last week I called. Or I texted actually and asked when the Audi would be ready.
Oh boy.
And I was told today.
Oh.
I did not call today.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bother tomorrow. I'm just going to wait till Friday and Friday morning, see if there's any chance that I could get the car for the weekend. Like I jokingly said, okay, mid-March you're saying, so mid-April is realistic. Like you know, I don't have much faith, man. You know, with everything going on in the world, like I feel like
yeah, true.
Problems and like I'm not. I just want it right. I don't want it right now.
True.
If everything is right, then it will have all been worth it. But if anything's not like 100% and up to my satisfaction, then
right.
Like I said before, I'm just going to sell the car, which sucks, but. You know, I'll find something cool. I don't know what else I want, man. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm in a point where I could sell everything and start all over, or keep everything and just kind of like tweak it, you know, one part at a time, like just upgrade stuff here and there and
get everything
like up to my liking. So.
Yeah. I've been thinking about selling the, excuse me, my nose is like running. I haven't been thinking about selling the Jag, but I've thought like it might be fun to like I've had you know I don't have a strong attachment to it, so
right.
If something came along, but now is literally like my allergies. Now is it like a month ago was the best time, and we just rolled into the worst time to sell a car with that car gets. Horrendous fuel economy, but I think it's because it has a fuel leak. So I got to figure that out. Yeah. Speaking of
by the garage, put it on the
I don't want to mess with the fuel system on that car. I'm going to send it somewhere.
I feel you.
It has saddle tanks. They're buried in the fenders. The lines run up behind the seat. Yeah, exactly. But speaking of the Jag, I still need to install the dash cam. And my next bullet point was to have someone diagnose the fuel smell. But on this lovely lady behind me, the Montero, I put out a video on the what?
The trusty steed,
yes. Which is probably more my mountain bike than this bitch. But I put out a video on the Hooniverse YouTube channel. On the dash cam, and Next Space was like, we loved it. It was a great video. It was like, cool. Thanks. We got more to do, you know. Still gonna do one on the Jag. You sent us a bunch of dash cams and I want to get you content. Because we appreciate that. My roof.
I have an idea for video and I can make it, you know, totally on my own with the dash cam, but I've been wanting to make this video for a long time, so I promise I'll do it in the next 2 weeks. But I want to make a video on how to drive with oversized wheels, like +2, +3, like really big wheels. Like, what is required of you, and like
pothole stuff.
Yeah, like how you adapt your driving style to having wheels and tires that are susceptible to pothole and road hazard damage. Like,
nice.
Like, there's definitely a driving style and like almost like a lifestyle that like comes with this. Like, you just like. The easy title is like how to ride rims. Like, that's like, you know, for my friends and family back in Atlanta, like that would be the title, but maybe we,
AKA how to maneuver your vehicle. That's funny you say that, cause I remember when you and I drove to Auto Conduct, which is in like not the best part. It's just in like, it's tucked into a part of LA where there's lots of potholes, and you were in the Audi, right? That day. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
So I could like, see you swerving, you know, and I'm in the Jag, which has like balloon tires. It has nice wheels, but the tires, there's so much sidewall. So I was laughing and I was like almost purposely hitting potholes. It's like, boom, boom.
which is fun. You know, like I said, it's almost like a lifestyle. Like, you have to be conscious of this stuff all the time. Like, especially nowadays, especially with all the crime and like carjackings and follow home stuff. Like, the last thing you want to do is be stranded on the side of the road with a flat tire because you didn't avoid a pothole or a big bump or something. Like, it's
never even thought of that way.
Informs your driving, at least my driving. And like, I think that's the perfect video to make with a dash cam that is both forward and, you know, cabin facing.
That's a great idea. I'm down with it. I want to see it. But better news on this besides the dash cam is I just got the notice today that the towers came in for my roof rack, so he can ship it now. It's shipping, and I'm fucking stoked. Though it will no longer fit in here as that roof rack is on, which is kind of kicking my own self in the pee hole a little bit, but I'll figure it out. I'm not stressing on it too badly. And then while I was doing the wrenching on that F-250, check this out. The truck, the F-250 had this like super gaudy, gross aftermarket bumper with like three light bars in it, like ridiculous, but it also had a pair of these.
Nice.
So I was like, can I take those? And they're like, yeah, sure. So we just snipped the wires off them. So I got to get a wiring kit for it, but they're behind the lines.
Like base of the A-pillar?
No. I'm going to put them probably like up on the roof rack.
Oh,
like,
nice.
On the corners of the roof rack. But this is like, because there's a pair of them. I got two of them.
And they're huge.
Like, they're like $700 lights.
Nice.
Baja Designs is like crazy expensive shit. And I saw those, like, can I take those? They're like, we're just going to throw that bumper away. So yes. And somebody else who worked in the studio was like, can I have the light bars then? They're like, yeah, the only thing we're going to save is the winch that's in there probably.
Come up.
So yeah. Boop, boop, boop. Big ups to Baja Designs because I didn't have to pay you. Booga, booga. So I got to mount it to the rack. When the rack comes in, I got to run the wiring for that shit, and I got to do a bunch of other stuff. But that's where I'm at.
Now you know how to do this shit.
Well, no. I'm not. Because the light, the rack comes with an integrated front light bar, and the only real way to wire it correctly on this truck is to drill through the roof. So I've already spoken to the people who installed the audio system and the dash cam on this. They're like, we can do that. We'll silicone it. We'll waterproof it. We'll do it all right. I'm like, booyah. Like, we've done it on a handful of off-road vehicles. I'm like, in. Because I know, like, I don't want to do it wrong. Rust stuff gets in there, blah, blah, blah. Like, we live in a pretty dry place, but I don't want to fuck with it.
Totally.
And I hate wiring. Let's move on to some questions, though. Start with Twitter.
I get so excited for questions because I don't ever see them until we actually record.
Nice.
It's always a pleasant surprise for me.
First one from Matthew at plays underscore with underscore cars. He wrote, this is in relation to a tweet I posted earlier where I said I worked out, which is good. And then I ate cookies, which is who gives a shit? Fuck it. You know, be happy. Like cookies with like shitload of calories too. He wrote, what kind of cookies did you eat today after your workout? What's your go-to Girl Scout cookie? And what do you think of Haggerty buying Radwood? So I'll answer the first two and then we can chime in on the third one. Okay. Unless you have a go-to Girl Scout cookie as well, of course. What kind of cookies? Employee appreciation cookies from the Cox Automotive people. Here's one of them. The trash box is still here. This is called the Brookie Dough or Brookie. I don't know. But this thing is like 570 calories.
It's a brownie and cookie mix.
Yeah, maybe that's hybrid. What it is. Yeah, that might be. And then because I ate two of them. The other one was a chocolate salted caramel bad boy. That was another 500 calories. So I'm like, and then the crazy part is that there are two more. And I'm debating whether or not I'm going to eat these motherfuckers tonight.
I wish we were recording in person so I could have one. What are the other varieties? It's got like
pretzels and shit on it.
Oh my god! That's my type of dessert. Sweet and savory.
Yes,
give it to me.
But I do have a favorite go-to Girl Scout cookie. No brainer, easy, 100%. The Samoa or the Caramel Delight, whichever one you want to call it. Yeah.
I feel like
same deal.
I'm Thin Mints all the way. Thin Mints in the freezer, bro.
My wife, I think, likes that one. The new lemonade one is pretty good.
I'm not up on Girl Scout cookies.
Oh yeah, dude. I gotta
hit the grocery store and see what's up.
I had one of the funniest interactions leaving a grocery store years ago. This is before I was married, before my wife was even out here, when I was a single man living on the West Coast. One of my friends from Boston lived down in Pacific Beach, and he lived in a house with like five dudes, all his former college football friends. No, it's not Anthony Day. It's a bunch of white boys from Boston. We went out for supplies to, you know, drink, because that's what we did in our early 20s and mid 20s. And
red cups, ping pong bowls.
Yeah, basically.
What else?
Just too much bullshit. So we're walking out, and this one kid in the group who's my buddy went to college with was one of those kids who was like so smart, but like never applied it, like too smart for his own good. Like he would say things, you'd be like, this kid's like a fucking psychopath, but he's also so smart. We're leaving. This is an example of that, but it was like witty and quick and made me laugh, and it's terrible. But we're leaving. And they're like, sir, would you like any Girl Scout cookies? And without missing a beat, he goes, sorry, I don't support terrorist organizations, and keeps walking. And I'm like, the girl's like stunned. The mom's stunned. And I am crying. I'm like, that is the funniest shit I've ever heard. Like, it doesn't even make sense, but it was so funny.
Really?
Yeah. But whatever. Okay. Moving on to what do you think of Haggerty buying Radwood? I'll let you go first because I've known about it for longer.
Oh, inside baseball. Okay, Pete Rose. I think it's interesting, man. Well, yeah, okay, that's our current reference. Yeah, yeah. Didn't do Atlanta any favors. Fuck that dude.
Nope.
It's not surprising. I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know. I have a hard time deciphering what's actually inside baseball and what I'm supposed to know and what is, you know, public knowledge. Like this, I'd say caught me by surprise, but it's really no surprise. Like, I'm surprised that I didn't hear about it before and I didn't know that it was going down. But, you know, I don't necessarily have any direct communication with anybody on either side of that transaction. But I am happy for our boy Brad and Art and Warren. And, you know, it sounds like it's definitely an upgrade and it's taking their business to the next level. And, you know, there's nothing to lead me to believe that Haggerty is like scooping up brands just to demolish them or to eliminate competition. Like, it's like they're pouring resources into everything that they have purchased. all of the shows, all of the different productions and stuff, like they're actually pushing the hobby, the industry forward. So right. I'm not mad at it. Like I don't think they have a history of like watering stuff down or like kind of ruining the spirit of their events and their entities. So I can't see a downside to it, you know?
Right. I think that was a pretty good way to put it, where you're not surprised by it, but you didn't know it was coming. I think that's probably how most people felt about it. I've known it was coming for months now because I've been working with Brad on Autopia. Right. So we would chat about it here and there, and I'm nothing but happy for him. He said, you know, a little bittersweet, 'cause it's like, you know, getting rid of your baby, but I also agree, and Art and Warren get to stay on as employees, which could be potentially good for them. I mean, Haggerty has all the money in the world right now. So they're a goddamn insurance company. So hopefully it continues to be what it was with them still there. Some of them still there. And if that's the case, then great. And if it's not the same, people will eviscerate it quickly. Sure. Dan Mosqueda at Moskovich. Are you going to follow F1 this season? And do you have a favorite team? I'm going to pay attention. I'm not a big F1 lover. I have my issues with the sport, where there's other forms of motorsport I'd rather watch. But I'm going to follow it just to see some of the drama, you know, to see what happens, which with, you know, Massey out and Hamilton should be typical laser focus Hamilton. So you want to see what Hamilton and Verstappen do. And then I don't have a favorite team, but if I had to pick one, I'm Team Lewis. I've always been Team Lewis, and I also love Mercedes. So, you know, that's probably my favorite team. I'd like to see what Vettel does in what I would assume is one of his last years.
Right.
That's really it for me, though. Other than that, I do not follow that closely to F1.
I'm a huge F1 fan. I have been for, I don't know, 12, 13, 15 years. Like, not coincidentally, but probably around the time Lewis came into F1. But I'm an unabashed Lewis fan. Like, super proud of everything that he's accomplished, you know, both in racing and outside of it culturally. I always want to see him do well, but I do enjoy him having competition. You know, it's, you know, last season was absolutely thrilling. I love that his number one competitor was not his teammate, which has been the case, you know, probably 6 or 7 years previous to that.
Right.
But he's got a serious competitor in George Russell this year on his team. Like, George Russell took Lewis's seat when he was sick with COVID and couldn't race, and damn near won a race. The team lost him the race. Like, George Russell is legit as fuck. He's going to be competitive this year.
There's going to be a little tuning on his car to be like,
sure, but, you know, I mean, team orders. Like, there's always team orders, and I don't care what anybody says. Like,
there's a one driver and a two driver. Yeah,
but Nico Rosberg won a championship as a teammate to Lewis. Like, you
that's
know,
true.
If he's a legit contender, the team will give him the chance to earn his championship. You know,
and Nico is smart to be like, I'm out. I'm done. It's funny that
Rosberg's a little bitch, but
it's funny that we're talking about F1 because a couple weeks ago I was in Texas visiting my brother, and he does he has a regular business that he runs, but he also got into selling sports cards through an app called Whatnot, and he usually does like traditional stick and ball sports, but because I was there, he bought a box of F1 cards, and we opened them together. Yeah, dude, there's F1 cards. Topps makes F1 cards, and we went through them, and he paid a lot of money for this box, and most of it was just bullshit, but he let me keep one because I thought it was hilarious. So this was the most like valuable card in the deck, and it's a fucking Gunther Steiner card.
Does he have a mohawk, or is that just like
what? No, it's just how the card looks. It's because of the glare. If you see there, he's regular hair. But this is like in every box, there's something called a relic card, I guess. And so it has like a little bit of fabric. It's behind the thing, but there's like fabric from his shirt or some shit, and it says it's like 102 of 151. But the fact that it was like not a driver, not a this or that, like it's fucking Gunther Steiner. I'm keeping that card. That is so funny to me.
Like, to what level, like, descendingly, do F1 participants get trading cards? Like the tire changers? Like, does the crew have cards?
There's some
Angela Cullen, Lewis.
There's team principals that get cards. But like they'll give cards to like F2 drivers though too. Like F2 drivers also get cards. And so like I was reading the cards, which he thought was funny because you're doing it live to try to get people to bid on these cards. And so like someone buy the pack and I would open the pack and go through the pack and I'd be like, F2 driver, fuck this guy. You know, fuck this guy. Blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, Nikita Mazepin, this guy fuck is the worst. And, you know, and like I'm like a casual F1 fan, but to all these guys who watch basketball, football, baseball, to them, I could have been saying anything. My brother's like, I don't even know.
You're there, Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, exactly. So it was funny too, because it's funny because my mom watches all his auctions and she texts us after. She's like, "That was so good to see both of you do." I'm like, "Oh my god!" I think she listens to the podcast too. So sorry, mom. It was very sweet of you to say. I don't know if she still does. She might not even know we restarted it. Actually, she used to listen to him. So there you go about F1. Phil Darlington at Phil Darlington. At Phil D. Weather is a weather specialist for Global Edmonton who follows me, which thank you, Phil. Do I follow you back? No, am I a dickhead? I'm a dickhead. What's going to happen to the classic car?
Thank you. Also, fuck you.
What? I'm going to like his tweet, so I'm not a total dickhead. I'm going to follow him. What's going to happen to the classic car market values with electrification and high fuel prices? I think there's going to be like a weird, like, I don't think anything's going to drop, but there's going to be this weird pause in prices to see what happens. So then if it all goes to shit, then then the drop happens. I don't think the fuel prices are going to impact the classic car market. And I don't think electrification is going to impact the market right now. Electrification can only aid in keeping the hobby alive to some degree. So I don't think those two factors are going to affect the market. I think it's more World War III that's going to affect the market.
I agree wholeheartedly. Like the electrification and the crackdown on internal combustion engines is only making the cars of the last 10 years, 20, 30, 50 years more desirable, because that's something that will never be replicated. It's just like, you know, AMG V8 cars. They're not making any AMG V8 cars this year, right? So, like, you know, maybe they'll come back online, but it's going to be scarcer and scarcer and scarcer. Audi has said they're not developing any more internal combustion engines. Like, you know, the Audi 4.0 V8, like, is like one of my favorite engines. And, you know, naturally aspirated BMWs, turbocharged V8 BMWs, Mercedes, like all that stuff is basically endangered species. Like, you know, they're being replaced with, you know, electric motors with huge torque, and it's the last chance that you can buy a car like that. So they're just going to increase in value. Like, with, you know, if they're maintained, if they're taken care of, if they're not fucking ratty, like, you know, I feel like any kind of car like that, like an S or RS Audi, an M BMW, an AMG, like, they're only going to increase in value, like, or at least maintain value. Like, we're not going to see the dip that we used to see, you know, in depreciation. Like, now those cars are just going to maintain value, depreciate maybe a little bit, but for the most part, just like be even keel, because you can't get that sensation, that driving experience out of
an
electric car.
Right. Birdie Redfern at Birdie Redfern. This is a great question. So the first part is a quote. It says, in the Rivian R1T, the optional full-size spare tire is located in a lockable compartment beneath the floor of the truck bed. And he writes, great. But what happens when you get a flat and there's a heavy crate in the back? And I had to Google this to check. He's absolutely right. To get to the spare tire, you're going from the top of the truck bed, not the bottom, like you do in a lot of other trucks. So, and it says, like, you have to empty the bed. If you have like a serious load back there, you can't. So that,
I don't so like, I, what do you mean? Like, if you have a bunch of two by fours, I mean,
no, like what if you were hauling home like a washer and dryer from Home Depot or something? You like, you can't just take those out if you get a flat.
I don't know. I don't feel like that's a huge concern. I mean, I'm a Rivian fanboy. Like, I love to see him.
I love Rivian,
but that seems like such a peculiar and specific concern. I'm not saying it's not a concern,
I think it's fair because people who actually use their trucks put shit in the back, and if you have it covered up, like, and then you get a flat, that would really fucking suck. That would really suck. Sure. I don't know where else they could put it though, because then you get down to battery and flat underneath, and you need a parcher. I mean, you need.
I would imagine without doing any research that Rivian has a solution for this built into like their roadside and UX
system. Based on what we've seen in the news lately, I might be begged to differ.
Yeah.
That is a really good question. And if I owned an R1,
I have somebody that I can ask tomorrow and I'll find out if they have an official solution for that.
Sweet. Because as someone who enjoys going off-road and doing this, if I was going to buy a Rivian R1T, perhaps I would consider relocating my spare to almost not trophy truck style where it covers the bed, but you could do like a swing-away rear gate, you know, like they do on some SUVs. Good question, though.
That is a huge pain in the ass, too, for anybody that parks in the city. We did that
to
our Gladiator, and it just made it like impossible to park. Like, I'm just like,
oh,
we had the spare in the bed, just ratchet strapped down. Then we got a rigged mount that's a rear, tailgate swing out.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant solution to allow you to use the truck bed.
Right.
But it's not compatible with city life. Like,
sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
JW at JVW 1983. What are some fuel efficient when driven for economy cars that are fun to drive? Miata.
I'm not going to be any help here.
Miata. If you can find Focus and Fiestas, you know, what's really fun. Honda Fit is a fucking blast to drive.
They have a Fit Racing Series somewhere, right?
Yeah. There's a spec. It was a spec B car. A Mazda 2 driven in anger is amazing. And there's nothing to it. Another great answer is the new Civic Si. I bet if you drove that simply and efficiently, it probably returned, really good fuel economy. And it is way better than you would expect. It was shockingly good in the canyons.
No experience and no interest in any of that shit. Sorry.
Almost anything Japanese is a good answer here.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Probably Japanese.
Right. Eric Ortiz at Soy Cafecero. Do you buy in-store car parts or do you wait to buy them when you need them? On the Jeep forums I used to hang out on, some people had a habit of storing parts that weren't always easy to come across. Do you buy anything?
I definitely buy parts. Oh, I have 3 grills, 2 bumpers, 4 sets of wheels for my Tahoe. Like, I buy shit, and I don't hoard. But, again, it's nice to have this garage space because I literally moved all that stuff out of my apartment last week. And, like, you guys may – anybody that's watching on YouTube may
– Oh, yeah.
Two Porsche seats right here, 3 grills. Like, I had all sorts of shit here, and, like, I'm reclaiming my living space with this garage space. But I definitely hoard parts, buy parts, stuff that is either rare or hard to come by, or that inventory fluctuates and you just never know. Like, right. I'll buy stuff in anticipation of upgrading or switching out at a later date. Like, I just you especially if you find a deal on something that's like NOS, like 1980s 1990s shit,
right?
Like, I bought a bumper filler for the front end of my Mustang from Celine back in October, November, and that's a part that they've been making since the 90s. And I can't believe that Celine is still open as a parts manufacturer and retailer, and that they still sell parts for a 1991 Mustang LX.
Yeah.
It's just this little trim piece that it doesn't even complete the trim piece in the front of the LX, but it's just something that only they made. And in my case, it covers up the 2 holes where I had that oil cooler mounted. So I bought this thing and I'm like super proud that I bought something directly from Celine. I don't know if it's 30 years old, but it's a 30 plus year old part number.
And right.
Like, I would have bought it if I didn't need it. Like, just nice to say I had it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. There's definitely it's when you have older cars, you definitely, I think you definitely do that. I have there's a Montero grill tucked on the side of my desk here, which was the original grill because I replaced it with a different grill. And in my drawers or in my stuff over here, I definitely have stuff for the car that I don't need right now. So yeah, I definitely do. I think it just depends what you drive, but I believe so.
What's the difference in the grills?
What's that?
What's the difference in the grills? Is it
like the slat design. There's the one I wanted was this. There's a company. I can't even remember what they're called anymore. But I think it's in the Philippines or Korea. Maybe it's Korea. There's a dude over there in Korea who takes Monteros and like kind of turns them more luxurious, almost like G-wagons them up a little bit. But he had this really stylish grill that he would sell, which actually I think came on earlier Monteros anyway. So I bought one from them. And then there's even another version that I like that I can't find that says MMC instead of Mitsubishi. So it's a little bit older. But the one I bought came chrome. I sanded it down. I painted it satin black. And then I still have the original grill with like the broken Mitsubishi emblem on it. And so I just... The one that came on it is like more crosses, and the one on mine is pretty much just straight lines.
Yeah. Horizontal?
Yep.
Always down with
rectilinear
horizontal loop.
Yeah. Matthew Skwarzak at Scouting for Zen. Do you think the current gas price spike will last longer than just a few weeks, months, and will it genuinely change vehicle buying habits, especially in regards to smaller cars and non-car options? I think it all depends what happens overseas, but I was reading something today about how we've already moved off of Russian oil a lot anyway. So like this gas price is more like reactionary greediness, which I'm not going to dive into politics on it, which I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I don't know the correct answer there. But I assume we're going to be here for a little bit, but I don't think it's going to change buying habits. I think it's probably spiking interest in electric cars, but on the flip side, because of the time we live in, there's going to be a reactionary flip the other direction where people are like, and
that's very eloquent.
We live in a time of social media where things swing so wildly in both directions.
You've got to be on one side of the issue. Like,
right.
Choose a side and stick with it. And there's no recounting or considering facts and developments and adjusting your attitude.
So first, there's going to be people who are like, the fact that we don't all drive electrics, you know, is fucking crazy. And then the other people were like, fuck this, I'm buying 10 more dualies and blah, blah, blah. So like, right, the rest of us in the middle are not in the full middle, but are just not on one side, because there's no one. There's, you know, thousands of sides. It's more like, all right, well, some people might be like, you know what, I'm going to downsize. Somebody today was talking about downsizing because they own an old Bronco and they want to get something more efficient for their daily commute. That makes sense. And then other people are like, you know what, I bought this truck. You know, I know what it is. I'm going to live with it. I made my choice. And then other people in Europe are like, your gas is still cheap, bro.
So 100%. I posted something to that effect just a couple hours ago. I'm just like, Americans complaining about gas prices is so ignorant because they have no idea what the rest of the world pays for gas. Like, sure, it's cheap in the Middle East, but Europe and almost anywhere else, like, you know, we have it easy. We have it nice.
Yeah.
Our gas is still relatively cheap. And like, yeah, there might be one gas station in each city that's like exorbitantly expensive. So it makes for a great headline and everybody's,
especially in California. Fishing.
It's like, motherfucker, you're not filling up in Beverly Hills. You're not filling up at that one station on Fairfax, like just south of the Peterson, Fairfax and Olympic or whatever it is. That station is always like $1.50 higher than anywhere else in LA. And
or there's one near Monterey. There's one near Monterey that's at $5 when the rest of us are, you know.
It's sensational to go and take a picture of that and be like, oh my God, like it's so crazy. Like I've been paying like $4 a gallon for regular, and between typically for the last 2 years, between $4 and $5 a gallon, right? We're at like $5.39 now. It's not nice. I'm not thrilled with it, but still it's way cheaper than the cost of petrol in Europe. And if it means that a lot more people go towards electric cars, which is happening anyway, then fine. Like go ahead. Like, you make your decision. You live with that. You install the charger. You pay whatever it costs to charge your car, or stop and, you know, wait 20 minutes to get a sufficient charge at a charging station. Like, you know, there's compromises that I don't think either side really considers. But yeah, in the end, like, right now we don't have it that bad. Like, oil futures plummeted today, and, you know, we have reserves. Like, the U.S. has petroleum and gas reserves that we could unlock.
Oh, yeah.
And we could drill more, and, like, we could satisfy our own supply and keep prices down. It's just a matter of, you know, the government under whatever administration. It's not a political talk,
right?
But, like, any president has the capability and the ability to open the reserves and drive prices down tremendously, mm-hmm, at will. But, you know, they choose not to for whatever reason. So, you know, it's gas prices are the most manufactured,
yeah,
numbers in our economy.
Right. Like, I agree with that 100%. All right. Instagram questions. We only got a few, so this would be good. Midnight Dory, I think this is a good question too, because I don't know. Where is the best place for a rookie to learn about wheel fitment?
Sorry. I would be undercutting myself in my 20 plus years in the wheel industry to be like,
fair,
oh, go here, because they could tell you exactly what fits your car. And, like, Tire Rack is pretty good, but they have limited resources.
I think they mean, the spirit of the question I'm getting is more about, like, the science of it. Like, where can they learn about, like...
Right. That's what I'm saying. Go to Tire Rack and, like, you know, that you put in your vehicle info and you select what available tires there are, right?
Okay.
And they'll give you OE sizes and OE actual, like, fitment. So it's like, if your car only came on Bridgestone and or Pirelli, then they would give you those OE options. And then they would give you other options, right, for tire size. Then they give you a plus one, a plus two. That's typically as far as they go, like, with recommended tire sizes. But that's not in consideration of wheels. So then you go to their wheel side, like, you enter your same vehicle information. Instead of choosing tires, you choose wheels. And then they have verified fitments that in whatever terms and whatever conditions they guarantee to fit.
Right.
So, you know, you could shop whatever brands that they make or that they sell, excuse me. And, like, it's not that many. They, you know, they have a few Wheel Pros brands. They sell a lot of BBS and other European brands, but they don't have a ton of selection. Like, you're not going to see some of the most popular American wheel brands sold on Tire Rack.
Right.
Just, they limit their vendors, they limit who they work with, they limit their, you know, options. It's like, if I make a wheel to fit, for example, an Escalade, and I make it in 22, 24, 26, 28, 30 inch, they would probably only offer the 22 and the 24 because they can match load rated proper tires with those sizes. 26 inch, like, they don't really sell,
so they can sell packages. Tires.
It's not just that they're selling packages, they're selling what is approved and load rated, like,
sure,
something that is safe in their
right, culture. Right, right. Where so if I go to you directly and I get the 30s, they'll be like, this works. Sign this.
Yeah, like, totally. Yes. We not responsible if
right,
your wheel cracks.
Right.
But yeah, like, typically if you have load rated tires, I've gone on ad nauseum here and Shift Talkers and other places, but, like, if you buy a wheel and tire package with load rated tire, you significantly decrease your chance of, you know, flats, bent wheels, cracked wheels, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, that's not what's hot and sexy. Like, if most wheel customers want what is above and beyond what is considered safe or load rated by most retailers.
You know, so those.
All that being said, Tire Rack is your best bet. They might not give you all the information. They definitely won't give you a formula, but you'll get an idea of the parameters that are safe for your vehicle. Like, you know, 9 times out of 10, I would not ever run anything that Tire Rack sells for a particular vehicle. I'd be like, that shit's weak and, like, that's goofy. Like, I would never do that. But they've done testing and they know that you're not going to, you know, you're not super susceptible to blowouts, to wheel damage, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
With their safe fitments. me, I'm like, stretch that shit.
You know the masterclass ads you see on YouTube all the time, like take a masterclass with this director or this screenwriter. We should shoot that in that style for you talking about fitment. That shit would be amazing.
All right.
I was thinking. Like, I'll get the lighting. You got the nice like mid-century shit in your place. We'll get the lighting right. Be like,
if you make it work, we'll combine that with some in-car footage. I'm down, dude.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It'd be hilarious, but it would also be informative and helpful.
No, we could do it right. That'd be the point. Jaked Up Car Art asks, you're invited to the ultimate black tie event. What is the custom car build? What is your custom car build to be seen in?
My 62 Lincoln when it's done.
I knew you were going to say that. That's a good answer, too.
It's going to be like the sexiest, like mid-century, like mind orgy. Like, it's. I don't even like talking about it because the ideas for the interiors, especially, are wild. So that's my answer.
Okay. I have two answers because one depends on, am I being responsible and I'm driving myself home, or is someone driving me home? Because if I'm driving myself, I would like to be there in the OG V8 Vantage. So all the other celebrities know what's up, like probably with like a swapped like fucking Vantage racing engine from a GT3 car or something.
Not a V12, a V8?
It's probably V8. The OGs are V8. The race cars are probably V8s too, not 12s.
Are you talking about like the 80s?
Yeah, like the Mustang one, the 70s and 80s. So I'd roll up in that. If I was getting driven, I really want to own like a Crown Imperial, or I want to own an Imperial, and it'd be cool to have that EV swapped with like four motors, and like roll up, mine wouldn't be mid-century. Mine would be like kind of like cushy.
Should be like 70s, like.
Yeah, like velourish.
Velvet.
Like,
yeah.
Closer to 60s, but it'd be like that. Yeah. Like, without being clownish. Like, there's the line. Yeah. And you talk to the right people and have it like, so some kind of Imperial done up to be driven in. Otherwise, I'm taking the Vantage.
Yeah. I think my Lincoln, I could either drive or be driven in.
The underscore DMO asks, best box stock 4-cylinder turbo versus V6. I'm assuming he's like, are you picking one or the other? You want a 4-cylinder turbo or a 6-cylinder?
I'm going turbo.
Yeah.
Torque advantage, sounds, power band. Like, it just sounds more fun. I am least fanatic about V6 engines than anything else on the planet. I've never met a V6 that sounded great, that really just like,
it needs to be in line, and then maybe your answer would change.
Yeah,
I think you're right, as much as it hurts me to say it, but like 4-cylinder turbos right now are incredible. I just had the Golf R, which was 95% an amazing car, minus, you know, the infotainment bullshit. Like, it's really good. 315 horsepower or something like that is fucking incredible. So yeah, I guess that's the way I'd go. Cause
they changed the all-wheel drive system, right?
What's that?
Like, it's like they changed the all-wheel drive system.
Yeah. It has drift mode. And,
right? Like,
and
it's like a real, like,
there's some crazy shit going on. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So I would go with the 4-cylinder turbo as well. V8's the real answer, but whatever. Taco_Bellionaire. So the US spec 7-seater VW ID Buzz is probably going to be lame and expensive, right? I'm going to hold judgment that there will be lame aspects of it, but it's going to be fun. And I think it looks cool. And I think there's going to be some really cool builds around it. So I'm not going to say lame. Expensive, probably. But I think they did their research. And the reason why we didn't get the vans in the past is because to bring them over without US specking them, they would have been super expensive. But to make one with the North American market in mind, it should be reasonably priced for what it is. I mean, all EVs have a price penalty, but when all these other automakers see what Hyundai and Kia are doing with their EV offerings, everybody's like, we got to fucking step our shit up. So who knows? Yeah. But it's also like a niche vehicle. So I'm not going to go full lame. I think there will be lame aspects, but I think it's going to be fun and cool looking. And I'm hoping like if it's sub 50, I think we're good.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, Especially considering that sub 50 is like, I mean, I almost can't think of a cool car that I'd like, yes, I would buy that for sub 50, right? Like, I don't even know that you get the right Mustang.
I can say this. I can say this because, because the embargo lifts when this goes live. I just saw the new Integra, production spec Integra. Mm-hmm. And the price they said it's going to come out at is like fully loaded, well under 40.
Okay.
Which is like cool. A-spec, but manual also, gearbox.
I'm also not like super thrilled about that. I don't think a lot of people are, but it's cool. It fills a niche. Hopefully people buy it so they continue to like develop it. But
the non-yellow, like the one they showed was like the worst mm-hmm. one I think they could have shown, because the three that they had there, like a blue one, a red one, and a silver one. And the silver one had like accessory wheels and a carbon rear spoiler and like shit like that. Like it looks so much better. So it's a lot of car for the price point at that point. So, it's still a Civic Si basically.
I was just going to say, pardon my ignorance, but is it basically just a Civic? Because my favorite looking sedan sold at the moment is like the full tilt Civic, whatever it is, like Civic sedan, like,
yeah,
not the Type R, but like just a Civic sedan. Like I've been surprised like five times in the last month.
Inside or so.
Like, out. Yo, what is that? Like I'll see it coming up in traffic at night on the freeway, and I'm just like, that thing is sick. What is that? And I'm like expecting it to be an Audi or even like a BMW, and then like I have to like chase it down. I'm like, that's a Civic. Like
so, at least
four or five times, I've been shocked by how good like a properly like. Option Civic can look. So I'm like, Integra. That's what the Civic looks like.
Well, it is nicer though, because you can get a better sound system, you know, head up display, a few other niceties, suede inserts in the seat. So you can just make it, which is what the Integra should be, is a graduated Civic. And driving the SI was awesome. So driving the Integra should be the same. It's the same fucking powertrain. They say the chassis tuned a little bit more aggressively. I'm like, okay, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. It's the same car, but it also leaves room in the price point for, I asked, I'm like, there's never been a Type S, but they brought the Type S name back for other Acuras. I'm like, is there going to be a Type S? And they're like, no, you know, we don't, you know, comment on future, which is the answer. But they're like, the way they said it, I was like, maybe they're going to do a Type S version. They're definitely going to do a Type R though. Like, because the new Civic Type R is about to come out. The Integra will fall right behind it. It's going to look sick in championship white or whatever the yellow color is. Well, like the good yellow, not the fucking pre-production one. Last question from our boy CNC Picks. How bad did Rivian play themselves with the price hike game they played? Will they recover? Yes, they'll recover, but it does not. I mean, it was a bad look.
It was a totally bad look, but am I mistaken? I had this conversation with a coworker a couple days ago who actually has a R1T on order, but am I mistaken in understanding that they announced a price increase but then retracted it and said we was just playing, like y'all can have them?
They announced the
around the price we said.
There's two parts of the story that are shitty. Mm-hmm. One is like okay, kind of shitty, and the other one is really shitty. So the one that's like kind of shitty is like they did the price hike. The internet was like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Like we're reservation holders, and they're like, okay, sorry, for you guys like who had your reservations in, we'll honor the original price. Great turnaround. The shitty part comes with, it relates to their lawsuit with their former employee, Laura Schwab, who was at Aston Martin for a while and then went to Rivian. And she was brought in and she's suing them because she said it's this like techie boys club. There's all this bullshit. They never listened to her, blah, blah, blah. And it's come out in the lawsuit that like a year or more ago, she was like, yo, we can't deliver them at this price. Like we need to raise the price. And the CFO, or like not RJ Scringe, like not the top guy, but like one or two below him was like, no, this is ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody else, a man, went to that dude with the same info. He's like, okay, what are we going to do about it? So like, he's just like discounted her which totally validates her argument. And then the other guy came along. So like the whole price thing, they waited.
That's complicated by the fact that exactly that they waited until after the IPO. That's the serious crime.
As it relates to the lawsuit,
they knew they were going to have to raise prices, but they held off on announcing that until after the IPO.
Yeah. So in terms of actual like crime potential, the IPO bit is bad. But in terms of like literally just being like, oh, this chick, I'm using air quotes for those not on the video. This chick is suing us for this. And like, she literally is like good at her job. And is like, we can't like the price needs to go up. And they're like, whatever, lady. And then like a guy came along, was like, hey, I'm saying the same shit she said, but like, I'm a man. The guy's like, oh no, I should listen to you. So like, that's bad.
So yeah, like I said, I didn't read the latest developments. Like I just saw headlines and stuff. So I heard that there was a retraction, but I also heard that it basically this next round of allegations like is much more serious. It's not just egregious one person, but it involves the SEC and it's like bad, not good.
I think they'll recover because they're a white collar tech company, and
The product's good. I'm not thrilled about.
They'll be like, "Don't do it again."
Somebody will fucking lose their job. A handful of people will lose their jobs. They'll fucking go through sensitivity training. They'll fucking.
It's still better than Lordstown though. Fuck that company. Yeah. That was a scam. Yeah, I mean, totally. Rivian is not a scam by any means. By everything I've heard, it's a fantastic product. They just had some really very unfortunate growing pains is like the best way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, they got a bunch of dickheads and,
it is still a tech company.
They were power drunk. Like they were, everything that they were doing was fucking striking gold and they were just fucking, it was a big fucking circle jerk and, they got busted being assholes. Like,
I have a pretty typically negative bias towards Silicon Valley or tech based stuff, a variety of reasons. And this just reeks more into the whole, culture, even though, they're not based in Silicon Valley. All the people who probably work there came from Silicon Valley, it's a techie bro-y culture that I just have many problems with. And this is just another example of that. So,
100%
agree. But that's our show for this week. Before we fully cut out, we have a good guest next week.
Yeah, buddy.
We can say it. It's not like it's a surprise unless our schedules get fucked up. But Tony Angelo,
at some point.
Yeah. Tony Angelo is joining us on the podcast next week to talk about his new ventures. He's left the Motor Trend family. He's ventured off. He's doing his own thing and looks like he's fucking killing it.
Yeah. So excited for that.
Yeah. He's a very, very cool individual. And I'm happy for that one. Where can everybody follow you on social media?
777 style. Search that on Instagram, on Facebook. That's where you'll find me. Facebook is a wasteland these days. Like nobody's on Facebook.
Oh, I'm not on Facebook.
It's like nobody has anything to argue with their neighbor about. So
all the Russian bots are gone. So that's good.
Right. It's like, we're not fighting about Russia. We're not, everybody's choosing sides, but nobody's choosing Russia's side. So it's like, Facebook is the most boring place on earth. Like the only reason I check Facebook is to see people's birthdays and shit.
No, you're on there for bikini pics. You can tell me the real fucking reasons. Chicks are in high school.
What is Instagram for? What is TikTok for?
Sure, yeah.
Bikini. I'm more like my elementary school teachers and people I went to kindergarten with.
I haven't been on Facebook for a while, and then my new Instagram handle is Fat Cookie Fuck. So follow me there. And then also my original account is Hooniverse Jeff. And then if you are watching this on YouTube, like and subscribe to the Hooniverse podcast channel in addition to the main channel, and then go to Blipshift and buy some shit. And that's my pitch. We're out.